I have the privilege of teaching at Stern College, and those of you who have been in my class, and I believe some of you have, know that my goal is never, never to present to you what you should be thinking, but to present to you ideas how you should be thinking. So what I'd like to do today on the very centrally important issue of changing roles for women in synagogue ritual and Jewish leadership, question mark, and the question mark is crucially central for our conversation, is to present different perspectives for you to consider. I am going to present a more traditionalist perspective. I'm going to present a less traditionalist perspective. In other words, one perspective that argues no change, another perspective that argues yes change, and I hope you will not know from my presentation how I feel about this matter. I happen to have feelings about this matter. I hope you will not know. My goal is to present each of these positions as passionately and as substantively as possible so that you will have kelim, you will have sources, you will have perspectives that hopefully will enhance your own understanding and appreciation of this issue. So I don't need to tell you that this is probably, as we speak now, the most burning issue in our community, the most challenging issue in our community. We've heard recently about women rabbis. We've heard a little bit before that about women wearing tefillin. We've heard about women's partnership minyanim together with men. We've heard about women's prayer groups. We've heard about a lot of discussion in our community designed on the part of some within our community to push the envelope. And the question is, so what do we think about this? And how do we understand it? And what ideas can we internalize that will help us come to a sophisticated understanding of this issue from both sides? All I would ask is that you're open to hear both sides. You're going to decide what you want to decide. I'm not interested in changing anybody's mind in any direction. Hopefully, with the material that I'll present to you, you will even be more strongly ensconced in the position that you take. Maybe you'll be a little bit open to appreciate maybe there's something to be said about the other side. These are Dvarim Ha'omdim Berumo Shalom. I want to begin with the more traditionalist perspective from the Tshuva of Rav Aaron Walkin in 1927 on the first page. Rabbi Walkin is a rabbi in Poland. He sends a tshuva to a rabbi in London. Now we have 6 pages of material. I'm not going to be able to work through every line. I just want to point you to the Rosh Ei Prokim. Hopefully, if you're interested enough, you'll be able to go back and drill in on your own to flesh out the whole picture. So the question that he's addressing to the Vada Rabbanim in London, under the leadership of Secretary Rabbi Tzvi Ferber, in Tafresh Pei Zayin, which is 1927, there are 3 questions that are on the table. Rabbi in London, on behalf of the Vada Rabbanim in London, sends a letter to a rabbi in Poland, one of the greatest rabbis at that time. B'dvash e'loskom al shlosha p'sha'im, asher elu heim ha'mordim, macharive karta rotzim l'sakein u'lahanhig b'irchet. So you already understand very well that he's tipping his hand at the very beginning. This is not an objective discussion with regard to the 3 questions you were asked, but with regard to the 3 sins that are being done by those who want to rebel, those who are tearing down the walls of the city, rotzim l'sakein, and you see the play on words with the saf and the samach. L'takein means to institute, l'sakein means to endanger. Number 1, lasos tvilasam keva, kovi isha erva, ulahamid mekevo, the shorir and the chazan the besaknesis. Number 1 is they want to have a mixed choir. Tvilatam keva. Keva is a rabbinic phrase in the context of tvilah. There's tvilas keva, there's tvilas rishus, but keva here is used as reshe tevos, kol biisha. They want to have a mixed choir. That's number 1. Number 2, lenagen beugav or gil b'nei hachol b'shas chopa. They want an organ, not on Shabbos. The issue was not on Shabbos. The issue was at a wedding in the sanctuary, in the synagogue during the week. They want to have an organ. issue number three, and that's the one that's relevant to us that I want to focus on, confirmation l'na'arot, Chag HaBagrut b'Beit HaKnesset. They want to have a bat mitzvah ceremony. They call it a confirmation, or he calls it a confirmation. And here again, he's tipping his hand by calling it a confirmation. Confirmation is a goyish thing. A confirmation is a Christian thing. He calls it confirmation l'na'arot, parenthesis, Chag HaBagrut. This is a ceremony of coming of age. B'Beit HaKnesset, va'al yedei zeh, and he's off and running. And he already continues to give you a sense of where he's coming from. As a result of the fact that we're now going to have a confirmation ceremony in shul, v'ali beizeh taruvos anashim v'nashim, zugos, bachuru besula gam yachad. We're going to have now the intermingling of the sexes. We're going to have men and women. We're going to have couples. We're going to have young men and young women together. Boy lachug es chag zevach. And it's not appropriate. So those are the three questions. So you see the way he formulates the questions. We don't have a letter from Rabbi Ferber to him. We have his response, and he begins his response by summarizing the questions. You see clearly where he's coming from. He's got a whole mahalach, he's got a whole analysis on question number one about the mixed choir, question number two about the use of the organ in shul for a wedding during the week. I'm interested in question number three, the ha'acharon, on the left side of the page. It's about three pages. This tshuva is a hefty tshuva. He's got a lot to say, but let's focus on the issue. Ha'acharon, hichbid, very serious, b'masherotzim l'hakil kihilot anashim k'nashim, b'acharim u'betulot, they want to gather together, men and women, young men, young women. You see already, the question here is being framed as problematic because of the mingling of the genders of men and women. L'chol chagigat habakrut l'naro. L'vav chakol tamei ha-pritzus v'hatiyuv shebi'arti le'el esnayu gamazer. Pritzus. Translate pritzus. What? You never heard the word pritzus before. What does pritzus mean? Inappropriate, licentiousness, and tiyuv. What's tiyuv? Tiyuv toeva. What's toeva?
Abomination.
It's licentious abomination based on what I said before. And basically what he said before, he's going to come back to that, is the intermingling of men and women in 1927 in Poland and now in London. Od kama isure de oraiso ikabase. You want to have a confirmation ceremony for women, young girls, the age of 12, we call it a bat mitzvah. Kama isurei de oraisa. Achareshe bevadai, kol ha'osekein kavanato lehistamos la'akum ulirishe Yisrael ha'reformer. First issue is the issue of intention. There is no doubt in his mind that the reason why this is now becoming an issue, because those who want to institute this, simply, boldly, without any question, want to ape what the Christians do and what the reformers do. Already in the middle of the 19th century, bat mitzvah, or confirmation, became part of the reform ritual. And those who want a bat mitzvah now we're in the traditional community. Rabbi Ferber, this is a question that was posted to the Vada Rabbanim in London. It's an Erlicha community. Those women, and he assumes it's women, but it's maybe women and men, their desire is, their intention is not holy, not meaningful, not to enhance spirituality, not to give the young woman an opportunity to somehow feel part of the community at this most momentous moment of her life. They're doing it because they want to be Christian-like, they want to be reform-like. Isidore Rice, Ukvar Isharu Bozeh Alzeh, B'shiva Losaseh, multiple times. What's the Yisidor Raisa? What's it called? What's the Hebrew? What's the language? You can't follow in their ways. They have confirmation. You can have confirmation. And you're doing it because you want to be like them. Yisidor Raisa. Yisidor Raisa. Because your intention is for the sake of being like them. There's no sense here of any value in this effort. He's got a long mahalach here. Mi yigala, skip to the where the other lines begin more seriously. Mi yigala afer me'enem shalom esakim halalu. Who can possibly remove the dust from these people who want to institute this? Mashakosu achronim le'inyon im nashim rishol lovu le'beis ha'knesses l'shmo' akriyas parshas ocha masa amolek. Women can't come to shul for anything. There's a whole question about whether women can come to shul even for Parsha Zohar. Zohar is a mitzvah. The women are obligated to perform. It's not a mitzvah saseh shazman grava. And yet, there's this whole pushback and a whole discussion about whether women can actually show up in shul to be mekayim the mitzvah the way the men are mekayim the mitzvah on Parsha Zohar by hearing the Parsha. B'chol zos kasvu, afshel afio emes, we're in shul, and we're learning from the Torah. And we have holy thoughts when we're learning from the Torah. We're reenacting the revelation at Sinai, and yet women can't go to shul or shouldn't go to shul. Because it's mixing. Because it's not appropriate. The Kavachomer, if that's the case for Kriyas HaTorah, says Rabbi Wolkin in Poland in 1927. The Kavachomer, B'Shas Chedva. Chedva is what? What's Chedva? Gila, Rina, Dita. You've been there, right? What's Chedva? Joy, happiness. This is not listening to the Torah reading. It's a party. This is great. We're having a great time. It's wonderful. We're happy. We're joyous. Kal v'chomer b'shas chevra u'shalo l'tzorach shum mitzvah. First issue is the intention is inappropriate. The second issue is b'chukosem lo se'lechu, you're doing what the Christians do and what the Reformers. The third issue is the intermingling of men and women. Not appropriate. The fourth issue, which I think is today probably the most compelling issue, and the one where the rubber hits the road with regard to these issues, the kol shkein l'sakei davar chadosh, asher lo shamanu she'ov l'fi hayom. What are you doing? You're doing a davar chadosh. You're instituting something new. We never had this before. Right? His bubby and his bubby's bubby and his bubby's bubby's bubby didn't have a bat mitzvah. You don't do these things. Even if it's not prohibited. But we have a tradition. We have a certain structure. We have a certain set of expectations. We have a certain way of life. We don't mess with that. You don't start to introduce new things. You start to introduce new things. Who knows where it's going to end up? You have to be really careful. You're walking on coals. To introduce new things. Even when it's not usher. Kolshkin the Davar Hazeh. Certainly this I have already laid out for you in the whole first part of this side of the page, is manifestly usher. Isidore Raisa. And you go so far, Kolshkin the Davar Hazeh, Sheri Sura Chamor Ma'od, it is Raya Davo Dezara. It smacks of idolatry. He is Eshlahava. Eshlahava means really extreme about this. And therefore, under no circumstances are you allowed to do this. You cannot have a bat mitzvah, call it a confirmation, call it a bat mitzvah, mingling of men and women, bad intention, and don't mess with Jewish tradition. Now turn to the next page. Rav Moshe Feinstein, hold that thought. Rav Moshe Feinstein, I want to push one side on the table and then I'll come. Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in 1956 about bat mitzvah. He has a tshuva in 1956 about bat mitzvah. Speaking of bat mitzvah, now we move from 1927 to 1956. We move from Poland/London to the United States. B'dvar inyan ha'chafetzim la'anhid eza seder v'simcha b'banot Kishanasu benog mitzvah. People want to have a bat mitzvah. It's 1956. They want to have a bat mitzvah. Hine ein laso zeh bebeis haknesses b'shum ofen. Can't do it in shul. Can't have a bat mitzvah. Moshe Feinstein was a great man, right? We live, we get up in the morning, we go to sleep at night based on Rav Moshe Feinstein. He's our posek. Can't have a bat mitzvah in shul under any circumstances. Aflo balayla, even not at night. What's the even not at night thing? What's the even not at night? What's he referring to? Why even not at night? Why is day worse than night? Because what?
Seems like it's part of the tefillah.
Because during the day, either it seems like it's part of the tefillah, or there's davening going on. At night, the shul is closed. It's dark. Nobody's there. Nobody's walking in for any other purpose. No, even not at night. V'hatzere monye. If you want to like say something without a lot of great excitement, you refer to it as a tzere monye. You see it, the line number 5. V'hatzere monye, 1956, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Shel bat mitzvah hu vaday rak dover divrei rishus. What's divrei rishus? What's rishus? What'd you say?
You're allowed to.
It's as opposed to chovah. What's chovah? Obligated. What's rishus?
Optional.
It's optional. And next two words, who wants to read the next two words? Behevel. Wow, what does that mean?
Meaningless.
It's hot air. Heva literally means it's meaningless. It's not only it's a dover rishus, it's an optional. But hey, who would want to do this? It's nothing. Doesn't mean anything. The Koshke Bozeh, next line, Shamakor Bar Meha Reformer, the Conservativer. Where does Bat Mitzvah come from? Where did 1956 some Orthodox woman get the idea that she wants Bat Mitzvah for her daughter? Because down the block at the temple, that's what they're doing. This is not coming from a holy Jewish place. It's coming from outside of our tradition. Rabbi Walken said it's coming from the Christians and the Reformer. Rabbi Feinstein says it's coming from the non-Orthodox. Continue. V'rak irotzeh ha'av. Interesting. Like, the mother doesn't even figure in this conversation. V'rak irotzeh ha'av lasos eze simcha b'deito. Rishoy, if the father wants to do it, they can do it at home, it's okay. Aval ein zeh shum inyan usmach l'hachshiv zeh dvar mitzvah usu'udas mitzvah. It's not a Suda's mitzvah. It has no religious valence whatsoever. Ki hu rak kesimcha shel yom huledet ba'alma. What's a yom huledet? It's a birthday party. Very nice. When she was 10, she had a birthday party. When she was 5, she had like stuff on her head that they gave out to all the kids and they stuffed their tail on the donkey. And then when she was 10, maybe they went bowling. And now she's 12, they have another party. And she's 14, she'll have another party. There's a birthday party. You want to have a birthday party? Have a birthday party. It's okay. Can have it in shul. Can ever have it in shul. And the whole thing doesn't mean anything. And left-hand side of page 2. Rav Moshe Feinstein. Can a woman give a shir in shul? Can a woman give a Dvar Torah shir in shul? So the context here is, this is 1982. So we're getting a little bit closer. Sha'alta. Imutu la'aniach li'isha la'agit shiur b'beit knesset o b'beit midrash shalo b'shas hafil. Obviously, it's not during davening. So it's not during davening. It's separate from davening. And she wants, can she give a shiur in shul or in the base medrash? Kegon, for example, shebelel Shabbos Friday night. Noho che'eza balabayis no sen shiur b'beis medrash b'parsha sashavua. In the shul, it was very sweet in the wintertime, long Friday night, so they had a rotation of people coming to give shiur in shul Friday night on the parsha. Ubar l'shmoa anashim v'nashim. Men and women come together to the shiur. Imuteres isha l'itei nashim. To the woman. V'nira, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. First of all, he says, she'be'etzem ma'she yoshvim hashomen v'ta'arufos v'chisar l'god. If the men and women are sitting together, it's not a good thing. That itself is already problematic. But I'm not going to go there, he said. Avalo ekanes lidon benidun ze lemaisa. That wasn't your question. I'm not going to address that, but I'm already unhappy. Ve'etzem hagoda sashir al yedei isha mutar. If a woman wants to teach Torah, technically it's okay. Imhu ba'akra'i bilvad. What is akra'i? Occasionally, temporarily, on occasion. The tzorach lahazira, you have to tell her, she'teshev bidafka be'es amiras hashir. She has to sit. When she gives the shir, she'yihiyeh ba'ofan tzanua yoteh. It's more tzanias. To sit than to stand, so she has to sit. K'moken, yesh la'zozos, be'bayis prati dafka. V'lo be'es haknesis. Can a woman give a shir in a Beis HaMedrash, in a Beis Knesset Friday night? No. Once in a while, where can she give it? She can give it at home in somebody's property. The last, next to the last from Rav Moshe is Limud Mishnayos Labanos. And I want you to be aware of these. Because I would venture to say that if we went around the room, you probably had a bat mitzvah. Or most of you had a bat mitzvah, or something remotely resembling a bat mitzvah. Either you had a shalashudis with your kids in your Beis Yaakov class every month when those kids rotated around and you did something. Or you had a party or you had a something. And I would venture to say that you've been in places. Or maybe you yourselves have been on Torah tours. You've actually stood up in front of the mixed audience and given the shir. Or you've certainly seen women who have done that. And I would venture to say that you have studied, now coming to the next source, Torah Shebaal Peh, at some level. You've actually opened up a Gemara, even if maybe you went to a high school where they Xeroxed the Gemara and they handed to you the page, but they didn't give you the whole Gemara. Maybe you even went to a school where your mamash had a Gemara. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes a tshuva to Rabbi Yeshve. Rabbi Yeshve was a Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva in Philadelphia. There's a Haredi Yeshiva in Philadelphia. I'm actually a graduate of that yeshiva. I spent 5 years in the yeshiva of Philadelphia. It's an offshoot of the Lakewood yeshiva. And Rav Moshe writes as follows: Inei bidavar she nimtzu batei sefer liyaladot ulenarot shenigru b'shem Beis Yaakov. There are schools that are called Beis Yaakov schools. Uchadome and like them. She rotzim ha'hanhala v'hamorim l'modi mohen mishnayis. We want to learn mishnayis. I'm not talking about Gemara. I'm not talking about a Ritva. I'm not talking about a Ketzos HaChoshe. I'm talking about Mishnayis. Are they allowed to teach Mishnayis? So the Rambam says, you're not allowed to teach Mishnayis. The Rambam says, she'ein l'lameid l'banot Torah. You're not allowed to do that. Maybe Torah Shebechzav is okay. Torah Shebechzav is okay. But Torah Shebaal Peh, Al-Kopana Mishnayis, halfway down, Shehu Torah Shebaal Peh Tzivu Chachamim Shelo Yalamdu. V'lachein Tzorich L'mona Mizeh, not allowed to learn Mishnayis. Can't teach Mishnayis to women. V'rak Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos. That's okay. Because that is a way of life. That is ethics. Ethics you could teach. But Bava Kama, Rachos, Shabbos, Erevin, Sanhedrin, can't teach. Can't teach. That's the last line. Umitoch hapshitut akatzir. How big is this tshuva? It's 7 lines. Why is it 7 lines? Because it's obvious. I don't need more than 7 lines. You can't do it. The last text that I want to show you on this side of the ledger, and I think you need to already start beginning to think about, so what are you going to make of this? What do you make of this? What do you make of this in 2016, where 2016. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. I mean, don't get greater than Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Are we living our lives in contravening the Pesach of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein? We are. I would say most of us. So what does that mean? Last source I want to show you is the top right of page 3. This has to do with women saying Kaddish. So the absolute most famous Jew, the first time this issue came up in the Jewish community, was at the end of the 17th century. This is a tshuva of, it's not even on here, I'm so sorry. This is a tshuva of the Chavot Yair. Rabbi Yair Chaim Bachra, who died in Worms in 1702. He was Nifter in 1702. He was a rabbi in Worms. Have any of you been to Worms on some trip somewhere along the line? If you go to Worms today, you go to the cemetery in Worms, and there's a beautiful, beautiful matzeva for Rabbi Yair Chaim Bachra. It's a very, very important Beis HaKvaros to visit. It looks, in 2015, when I was there, like it looked in 1915, 1815, 1715, 1615, the Nazis, and I can't understand why did not touch it. It is mamish frozen in time. The Maharami Rutenberg is buried there. There's a shul known as the Rashi Shul. It's a very important ancient medieval Jewish community. It's a beautiful matzeva for the chief rabbi, the former chief rabbi, Rabbi Yair Chaim Bachra. She'ela, he asks, here's the question. Davar za naseh be'Amsterdam. Strange thing happened in Amsterdam. So he died in 1702, so the truth is like the end of the 1600s, the end of the 17th century. She'echad na'adar b'li ben. Strange things happen in Amsterdam, and it's very well known. Somebody died without a son. V'tzivah l'fnei p'tirato, and he commanded, he left over. He said, before he died, she'il medu asara kol yom toch yud beis chodesh be'beiso bischaram. He would pay a minion of men to study every day, mishnayos, in his house for 12 months. V'achar ha'limud tomar habat kaddish. And his daughter, and we don't know how old his daughter is, God bless you, the daughter would say kaddish after the completion of the learning in the house every day. That's the issue. This odd thing, davar zar, strange thing, happened in Amsterdam. V'lo michu biyodo chachmei hakila v'al parnasa. And nobody said no. So apparently, it's going on. In Amsterdam, there's this like odd thing happening, and that is that there's a group of people, it's a chevra mishnayos, learning in somebody's house, l'ilui mishmoso, and when they're done learning, the daughter, there is no son, the daughter says, says Rabbi Bachra, V'afki ein raya listor hadavar. Technically speaking, I can't argue against it, against a daughter saying Kaddish for a deceased parent. Ki gam isha mitzuveit al kiddush Hashem. What is Kaddish? Kaddish is the mekadesh shem shemayim kiddush Hashem. So a woman is also obligated in kiddush Hashem like a man. And second of all, skip two lines. Yesh svara. The gamba bas yesh toelas v'nachas ruach l'nefesh. What's the point of saying kaddish? So I don't understand it, but somehow it helps the neshama in the olamos ho'el yonim. Somehow it helps elevate the neshama. It brings a nachas ruach. It brings a sense of meaning and comfort to the deceased's neshama, knowing that they left a child who can read Hebrew and who cares about Judaism and who's interested in being mit'aleh, to raise their neshama. And, says Rabbi Bachra, that applies to a daughter too. Gam bebas yesh toelas v'nachas ruach. Ki zarohi. She's a child. She's a child. What's that? It's not a guy thing. She's a child. She also brings nachas ruach. Mikomako, however, he says, not a good idea. And this is another crucially central argument. Crucially. Central. V'komakom yesh lachosh, we have to be concerned. Sha'al pikach yechlishu koach ha-menhogim shel b'nei Yisrael, she'gam ken Torah. It's the last argument of Rabbi Wolkin, read back 250 years. If you're going to start to tamper with tradition, you're going to undermine the centrality of customs. Everybody, the literal meaning is will build an altar for themselves. It means everybody will do what they want to do. You know, yeah, I know technically it's okay, but then you'll do it like this, and you'll do it like this, and nobody can point to you and say it's usser. But before you turn around, the whole core of the tradition fritters away. There is a slang/technical term for this in the debate today about the role of women, and that's called slippery slope. It's a slippery slope. A slippery slope is an argument that I think really needs to be thought through carefully. Because we have witnessed in the 21st century, slippery slope starts with this, and then it goes to this, and then it goes to this. And then before you know it, you're off the reservation. So you'll say, no, when it's usher, I'll say it's usher. But as long as it's mutter, he himself says that he can't come up with a credible argument to say it's prohibited. As long as you can't come up with a credible argument to say it's prohibited, allow it. When you can come up, when it reaches the point where you can come up to a credible argument to say that it's prohibited, then you'll prohibit it. Why are you prohibiting it now? What's going to happen down the road? But the answer is, Chachamim of Berusha. Religious authorities who are tasked with the obligation to try to ensure the perpetuation of Jewish values need to make a cheshbon and say, yes, technically speaking, it might be permissible, but where is this going to lead? And that is a consideration that's credible. That is a consideration that's credible. Says Rabbi Bachrach in 1690-something, it's mutter, or to phrase it more correctly, it's not usser. It's not usser. But I'm going to undermine the tradition. If you ask me, J.J. Schachter, what is my role in this world? Why am I in this world? I will tell you. I will tell you that I am in this world because I received a precious gift from my grandparents and my parents. And I am in this world to make sure that that gift gets transferred to my children and now, Baruch Hashem, I'm up to grandchildren. That's what I'm here for. Not to mess up the transmission of the tradition. Yes, I know the world has changed, and that's coming up right now. The world has changed. My bubby didn't do a lot of things that my daughters and granddaughters do. But I'm walking on coals. Coals. Because chas v'shalom, there should be some stiyah, some deviation, that is going to end up, even though now it's not, it's okay, it's fine, all the lumdis, the psak, yeah, it's great, it's beautiful. It's okay, it's not awesome, you know, it brings you closer to a sense of spirituality. Yeah, I get it. I teach at Stern College, I'm surrounded by incredibly bright, thoughtful, inspired spiritual women, I get it. But, I'm nervous. Rabbi Wolkin is nervous. Rabbi Bachrach is nervous. And many rabbis today. I get it. I appreciate it. I hear it. I resonate with it. I got it totally. But as a responsible Hosek or responsible fill in the blank, I'm nervous. And that's where the rubber hits the road today. And that's one argument on one side of this discussion. So one side is the business about, well, I don't want to address them seriatim because I want to address them now in seriatim. So we've had a mingling of the sexes. We've had isadoi raisa b'chut basem lo se lechu. We've had you can't teach Torah, a woman can't give a dvar Torah in public in a shul. We've had you can't teach women mishnayas. We've had you can't change minag Yisrael. Even if technically it's okay, but it's, I don't know, I'm nervous. I'm just nervous. It's not from insensitivity. It's not from cold-heartedness. I'm nervous. Now let's look at the other side. I want to now make counter-arguments to what I just presented. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, I know you raised your hand before, but is it okay if we just keep going, and yeah, then I hope we'll have time at the end. Thank you. I should have special respect for you because you're the Rashke Bahag here. You're the whole. So I'm apologizing especially. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was a great Rosh Yeshiva here in our wonderful Torah institution, the younger brother of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Bottom right. He picks up the issue of the Chavot Ya'ir. What did the Chavot Ya'ir say? He just said it 10 minutes. What did the Chavot Ya'ir just say? The Chavot Ya'ir just said, it's mutter, but slippery slope. Says Rabaram, V'nira Achshav, halfway down in the bottom right, Shekama Anashim V'Nashim Yisrael, Lochamim Ba'ad Shivui HaNashim, L'Umat HaNashim. There's now a women's liberation movement. We'll call it a feminist movement. We'll call it women's equality. Women want to be equal to men. B'yachasim aliyot b'shvil hanashim, and particularly with regard to women's aliyot. And Cain says, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, im ha-rabbanim ha-charedim yimnu'u isha milomar kaddish. If they stop her from saying kaddish, that's what Rabbi Bachrach said. B'makom sheyeshna efsherut, sha'al yidei zeh titraba ha-hashpa'a shel ha-rabbanim ha-shomrim Hashamranim v'hareformim ein isur lumnoa bat milomer kaddish. What does Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, a fine Jew, a wonderful Jew, a serious Talmud Chacham, a great Jew, he says, today, you understand, today we're living in a different world. Today the zeitgeist is that there's a lot of push for equality for women. What's going to happen? The rabbi's going to tell the member of his shul, she can't say kaddish for her mother. She's going to be horrifically offended. What's she going to do? She'll say thank you very much. She'll pick herself up. She'll walk down the block. She'll go to the conservative synagogue, and they'll be happy for her to say kaddish. So therefore, you got to be careful. This is not like, we're not living in Mei Sharon. This is not a total traditional society. This is a society that's fraying at the edges. You have to be very careful. Rabbi Aaron's argument, I would call it, is a strategic argument. It's a tactical argument. It's not a substantive argument. It's tactical. What's worse? What's worse? A slippery slope, or you're going to lose your toe. I want to now go to a substantive argument. Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, Sridei Eish, on the left side. Again, the issue is about mitzvah. Michiel Yaakov Weinberg, and you probably have heard about him, I hope, at some point along your illustrious Torah careers. He's a great Jew, lived in the 20th century, went through the Shoah, published three volumes, and then there was a fourth volume called Sridei Eish. The Eish is the Shoah, the Holocaust, the what's left over from the Shoah, his writings, that's what he published. And in Chela Gimel, Sin and Tzadik Gimel, he has 11 pages on why it is absolutely okay, more than okay, for a girl to have a bat mitzvah. And he takes Rabbi Wolkin on in his face, point by point. 10 of the 11 pages is why it is absolutely inappropriate to say that this is an example of the Fukosei Mosei Lechem. It's got a lumpish analysis of what goes into the Fukosei Mosei Lechem. This does not belong there. If it belongs there, so how can a boy have a bar mitzvah? They also have confirmation. On and on and on. It's powerful in his argument. He, a crusade against the issue b'chor sen lo sen lech. Now he continues. And he addresses what I think is the real core issue. V'yesh to'anim neged ha'heter shel chagigat ha'bat mitzvah. But you're messing with tradition. The Bubbies didn't do this. How would we do it? The Bubbies didn't do it. And I tried to make a case before about how that needs to be seriously taken into consideration. Says he, be'emet ein zukana. It's not an argument. And he says it's not an argument, and I wish I had time to read the whole thing line by line and word for word, because it's exquisitely extraordinary. He says, you know what? Times have changed. Times have changed. The world isn't the way it used to be. In the olden days, a young woman who grows up, lives, breathes, imbibes the tradition from her mother, from her home, from her streets, from her shtetl, from her community. She's surrounded by traditional Jewish life, she doesn't need to have a bat mitzvah. She doesn't need to mark her coming of age in any specifically religious way because she's in it. She's drinking the Kool-Aid. She's in the program. That's her world. But now he says it's different. How sad it is. On the contrary, you walk out on the street, it's the opposite of traditional Judaism. You walk out on the street, right here, 34th Street, Lexington Avenue, you're not seeing, like, pious people dressed pious, thinking pious. It's a whole world going on. And, he continues, women are going to university. And women are reaching the highest levels of all of their scholarly achievements. And you're trying to tell me that in her religious life, she's backward? And in her religious life, she can't achieve and she can't do and she can't mark? There's something lopsided. Everywhere else, it's amazing. There is no ceiling this morning's presentation. You go anywhere you want to go. You become a CEO. You become whatever you want. Baruch Hashem, you can become whatever you want to become. Who knows, maybe a woman is going to become president of the United States. There's no stopping. And now you're going to tell me, Dafka in her religious life, she's handcuffed and she's stymied? Can't be. And therefore he concludes, six lines from the bottom. Vishurat ha-higayon ha-yashar. And the line of correct logic, the chovat ha-ikarona pedagogi, and the obligation of correct pedagogy, mechayev kema'at lacho gam labat et ha-ga'at ha-lechiyuv ha-mitzvah. We're obligated to allow a girl to have a bat mitzvah. It's not that it's an issa d'oraisa and it's a this and a that and God knows where it's going to lead. We're living in a different world. We are obligated. And then he says something that is, to me, stunning. V'haflaya zu. What's haflaya? What does haflaya mean in modern Hebrew? V'haflaya zu. She'osim ben habanim v'habanot. Haflaya in modern Hebrew means, and it's a loaded word, deliberately loaded, discrimination. It's not difference. It's not chiluk. Haflaya means this discrimination. It's almost a dirty word, certainly in America. V'haflaya zu she'osim ben habanim v'habanot benogei l'chagigat habagrut. Right? He gets a whole party. He gets a suit. He gets to the heart of being obscene. And man, everybody's throwing candies and presents and a whole thing. It's up and you're a sheer and a lecture and he leans and he dobbins and it's great. And she gets nothing. Zero. Discrimination that we make with regard to the ceremony celebrating the coming of age. Listen to this, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Amar, this discrimination, pogat kasher, beregesh ha-enushi shel habat ha-bogeret. Pogat kasher, deeply offends the human sensibilities of this young girl. She's offended, personally. Why? Shmerel, my brother, the lowlife. My whole life I'm fighting with him. He gets everything. And now I become 12 and Gunish, nothing. It offends her humanity. The concept of taking feelings into consideration is incredibly stunning. And that, for Rabbi Weinberg, has a halachic implication. Therefore, we're virtually almost obligated, adarabba, mechayev kema'at, to have a bat mitzvah. Hashem mishtachim achimim with other issues, kfar zachuha bezichyon ha-emancipatia kaviyach. She's emancipated. Everything else, she's emancipated. When it comes to her religious life, what message are we giving her? What message are we giving her about her Judaism? Doesn't matter. You'll be okay. What do you mean you'll be okay? What do you mean you'll be okay? You're not going to be okay. We're living in a different world. Now, this argument is a very powerful argument, but understand the problematics of this argument. Oh, we're living in a different world, so we should have this, and we should have this, and there should be no difference. We should have egalitarian service. It's a different world. Right? Today, you know, human rights and equal access. So at some point, if you are taken by this, you need to be prepared, if you are so inclined, to frame an argument why for this works, but for that, this doesn't work. I'm running out of time, so I want to just show you one last source. Turn to the last page. The Tshuva of Rav Ovadia about women saying gomer. This is cement I'm finishing in 3 minutes. A tshuva from Rab Ovadia Yosef about women reciting gomer. So there's a whole range of ritual practices that have changed over the last number of years. I teach a course at Stern. Maybe some of you were actually even in that particular. Every couple of years I teach a course on changing role of women in synagogue ritual and leadership ? And I go through bat mitzvah, I go through gomel, I go through kaddish, I go through women's prayer groups, a whole list of issues that I think are really important for us. Let's go to gomel. So let's take the nice, the happy gomel. So Baruch Hashem, shechiyonu v'kiyumonu v'giyonu l'zman hazeh, you had a baby, and Baruch Hashem, shechiyonu v'kiyumonu v'giyonu l'zman hazeh, everything worked out well. You want to express your gratitude to the Ribbono Shel Olam, so why should your husband get the aliyah in shul and say the gomel? Yes, I understand that he is going to get the aliyah, but after he's done, stand up in the women's section, and the rabbi says, we would all now like to please direct our attention to Mrs. Goldberg, who is returning after having given birth to a child. Mrs. Goldberg, we welcome you back to shul. We've missed you, and we are so happy to celebrate together with you. And we'd now like to invite you to please rise in the women's section and recite the Birchat HaGomel. She gets up. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam. No, that's the response. Makes the Birchat HaGomel. HaGomel Chayavim Tovo Shegemalani Koto. And everybody responds, Mishe Gemalech Kol Tov Huye Gemalech Kol Tov Sel. Is that a lot? So as Rabbi Ovadia, 100% it's allowed. Now you can understand that there are those who say it's not allowed. What you're doing here is you are inserting a woman's voice into the davening on Shabbos morning in the main shul. That's like amazing. I mean, that's a big deal, right? For the last 2,000 years in shul, there are no women's voices. I'm not talking about the woman who belts out Angel of Cain out loud, you know, like tries to, you know, that's beautiful. It's great. I'm not talking about that. Talking about mamish, just a woman's voice all by herself. And the whole shul turns to welcome Mrs. Goldberg back into the community. And she makes the bracha by herself. Everybody, her voice. And then you respond to her, Gemalech. So he says yes. And then in the footnote, this is the page 5 and 6, the whole tshuva about Gomel. And he addresses those who are opposed to this. And the one that I want to conclude with is the bottom right of the last page. Veraiti lehagaon. Veraiti, I'm sorry the letters are so small. It's a footnote in the tshuva. You have the reference to it. Rabbi Yosef Yedid Halevi b'sefer Torah Schocham she'erich bazer katav. She'ein li'isha lehikanes bein ha'anashim levarech ha'gomel. She shouldn't go into the men's section to say the gomel. Mishum Pritzus, right? We talked about Pritzus before. The Hir Hurei Aveira. Hir Hurei Aveira is that not nice thoughts might result. The Ani Omer, top left, She'en Yetzer Hara Matsui L'Sha'a Kamla Kazot. You gotta be kidding. I mean, you gotta be kidding. Hir Hurei Aveira, the men are gonna think. You know, we're in shul now. It's like it's a Jewish thing. It's like blessing. It's holy. It's God. What are you thinking about? You don't have to worry about that. Ubefrat, and this is the last line that I want to show with you, just 2 lines down. Ubefrat is manaseh. Shehanashim regilot latzeit l'shok. Ben ha'anashim. Isn't that an amazing thing? You know what? It's different. T-O-C. T-H-C. Times have changed. Today, in our culture, women are walking around all over the place. In our culture, men and women, we go to shul. We do go to shul. You go to shul Shabbos morning. Even not on Shabbos, Parsha Zohar. You go to shul. And you hang out after the Kiddush, after that. And you go to work. And there are men and women in the next building. You know, in this building. That's what we do. So, you know, take a deep breath and relax. It's a different world. It's a different world. Women today play a different role. And if women today play a different role, question we have to ask ourselves is, so that does that, and Rabbi Avadia says it does have halachic implications. So the notion of even a woman coming into where the men are, he doesn't see an issue. There's no Yetzirah. You've got to be out of your mind to think that somebody's going to have a Yetzirah. It's crazy. And it happens all the time. It's not the first time men and women are going to be here. Chill out. Just relax. Now, what does that mean for us? What does that mean for us, technically speaking? So that is the world in which we live. Even though, Baruch Hashem, we have Yeshiva College, and we have Stern College, and Chassid Shalom, and Zomish Mainland, that there's a co-working school. But Baruch Hashem, we have many opportunities. The van makes its way somehow uptown. You come uptown more than the guys come downtown. Now you have a beautiful library. You can hang out, Mamish, Lashem, and Luciferus. Second floor, the third floor, 3A, 4A. We're getting to 5 over the summer. We're supposed to fix 5 and 5A. So meanwhile, it's only beautiful till 5. It's a beautiful place. You hang out. CJF, Torah tours, coast to coast, Israel. Baruch Hashem, it's a different world. What does that mean? What are the implications of that? So my goal here is not to tell you what I think. My goal here is not to tell you what you should think. My goal is really to highlight the crucial importance of these issues that we're grappling with today, and to try to understand different perspectives. And I would summarize it as follows. On the one hand, there is something called, and I deliberately avoided using that term until now, but I live and die by this term, and this term is holy soul. I can't define it for you exactly, and I wish I could, and I'm working on it. It means there's a tradition. That's what I meant before when I said I got something from my hubby and I got to give it to my grandkids. It's a tradition. And that's important. You don't mess with it. On the other hand, realities have changed. To what extent is the fact that realities have changed going to affect boots on the ground changes for women within both religious ritual and in terms of leadership? That's really the question. If we can appreciate both sides, I think we'll be in a better position to formulate our own thoughts on this matter. I wish all of you well. I have to stop. Can I take like a minute of questions? And everything should go well for you. Yes.
What was Bar Mitzvah like at the time?
Yeah, so Bar Mitzvah, there is a book by Ivan Marcus called Rituals of Childhood, published Yale University Press about 3 years ago, that traces the history of Bar Mitzvah. We don't know exactly what it looked like. Bar Mitzvah is also very new. The first reference to Bar Mitzvah is in the 16th century. Generally, it was a Seuda after the Thursday morning Aliyah, early on.
So then why would there be an assumption that a bat mitzvah would be something that is like the confirmation of the goyim? Why was there not an assumption that it would just be a seuda where you would say she's 12?
Right, because bar mitzvah was already in the tradition from the 16th century, and bat mitzvah is now coming in because both Rabbi Feinstein and Rabbi Walken argue it's coming from the outside. It's coming from either the Christians or the non-Orthodox. It's not coming from a holy place, ergo, it's tarred with the brush of confirmation, ergo, the chukos ein lo selech. Bar mitzvah emerges out of the indigenous substance and worldview of Jewish tradition.
Oh. I mean, how does he know that it's not coming from Thursday night Suda after Bar Mitzvah, so therefore
there should be... Excellent question. Why does Rabbi Wolkin assume that the intention of these women, and I'm going to say women, but they're probably men too, why does he assume it's because they want to be like Christians? I'll bet you they didn't want to be like Christians. I'll bet you they... I know they heard about this thing for daughters. They want to make... It's a beautiful thing. They want their daughter to have like a big party because she's Jewish and they want her to love Judaism. And bat mitzvah is a big deal. You make a big deal about a bat mitzvah for a young girl, she feels like validated. And what? I don't have to tell you, I didn't live there, but it's really beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. It's meaningful. And you learn and you make a siyum or you talk about shalshelas hakdoros. Yeah. Excellent critique of Rabbi Wolkin. Excellent critique, yes.
It seems from the way you presented it that all the old-fashioned things, all the old-fashioned sources that are not in the modern world, and I guess Rabbi Wolkin was kind of on the border, are no, you can't do it, you can't change the Menorah, and then all the newer ones are times have changed, and you sometimes you
can
add
a lot of newer. There are a lot of newer sources who continue the argument, the traditionalist argument. There are no previous sources. But I guess for me, for now, Rav Moshe was the example of that. The Rav Moshe was the example of a 1982 who really keeps to the tradition. And for me, the most compelling argument of them all, because I'm not taken by the intention argument. For me, the compelling argument is Masorah. That looms very large for me. And for me, anybody who wants to make a change, and I think changes are warranted up to a point, needs to thoughtfully and sensitively explain why is it that women rabbis are not in keeping with the Masorah? Why is it that the GPATS program at Stern College or the Oetzet program from Nishmat is in keeping with the Masorah? That is a conversation that needs to be had, has not yet been had. What's the difference? I understand there's a difference, and I actually accept that difference. But what's the difference? So there's a lot of further analysis. That, to me, is the core issue that needs to be brought into this conversation. Yeah.
Just that grand mindset that's emerging from allowing changes. Is it that we have ideals and then if society changes, for those that allow changes, it's that we have to conform.
It's an excellent point.
Or is it that this is how halacha should be kept? This is like the ideal way it's kept in 1600s.
Right. That's good. That's an excellent question. If you asked Rabbi Weinberg, in the best of all possible worlds, would he have preferred that it be the way it was in the shtetl, where we would not need to have a bat mitzvah? Or would he say, in the shtetl, that was a lechatchila, and now this is a lechatchila? I think that's a very, very important question. And there are those who make the argument that we are now blessed by certain ideologies of more equality, and we should welcome them and embrace them, and that, therefore, the chatchila leads to certain practical consequences. That's an excellent question, and I think you should think more about it yourself. Is it all only a b'di'evet nebuch? We're living in such a sick society that's not really traditional, and therefore we have a stock? Or given the new realities, It's the only way to go, because it should be the only way.
The first seemed like that's what Aronson was saying with the first way.
Right.
But
in
then
the case of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, it's absolutely clear. It's absolutely clear. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik says quite explicitly that the Chavot Yair is right, that really there's a slippery slope. But Nebuch, what am I going to do? She's just going to pick her a mug up and walk out and go to the conservative synagogue because she wants to say Kaddish for her mother. You can't tell her in 1990 or 2000 that she can't say Kaddish for her mother. She wants it. You know, halavai, you should never have experienced this. But if, God forbid, you lose a parent. I lost my first parent 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago. To say Kaddish is extremely meaningful. Extremely meaningful. It's a way that I connected with my father every day. I felt like I was doing something for him. I was kind of, it's incomprehensibly meaningful. And now, my sister also wants to say Kaddish. She has the same sensibilities. So Rav Aaron says, you know what? I'm aware of slippery slope. But we're stuck. For him, we're stuck. I'm not sure that for Rabbi Weinberg, we're stuck. I'm not sure. Something to think about. And what's your position on this matter? Do you think that any changes are concessions to the sordid reality? Or do you personally consider them to be, you know, let's do it. Let's proactively do it because it's great that we should do it this way. We should do it this way. I have to stop.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay. I'll hang around if anybody has questions.